Welcome to day three of StarCast 6, live here on Premier Streaming Network. My name is Josh Chernoff, and I am excited for today. I have the opportunity to host this little bonus panel. You might not have even seen it on the schedule today, but I think this is going to steal the entire weekend. So, welcome to Wrestling with the Law. I am not a lawyer. So we're going to bring one out. The gimmick attorney, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Mike Dawkins.
Actually, come bearing gifts. Yeah.
That, you see, that's what a guest is supposed to do.
Right, you got to butter the guy up.
Yeah, please. All right, let's see. What do we have here?
So for those who haven't seen, who don't know, you know, I do a lot of trademark work.
Yes.
And during the pandemic, I had gotten the trademark for The Voice of Wrestling, for JR, for Jim Ross. And we were down in Jacksonville having breakfast, and it was with Conrad and Dave Silva and all that. And I thought, man, you know, this is so cool that I get to do this and get to do this for these people, with these people. Like, they get to own their brand. They get to own their stage name or whatever it is they're saying. And they get this certificate that's really official from the trademark office, and it's just cool. Like, I want them to be proud. I'm proud that I got to help them do it. I'm proud that I got to help them acquire it. They get to own it and control it. They should be proud, too, so let's make this a moment. And so I started doing this.
Oh, boy. Do I stand up for a picture here, or what's...
That'll come after the show.
Oh, after the show. We'll do that after the show. Okay. Oh, wow.
According to the United States government, you own So Says Chernoff.
Wow. Look at that.
But that's not all.
That's not all.
Also, Alternative Commentary.
Wow. Alternative Commentary was a show that I did in the past where we would just talk about whatever is going on. We would provide alternative commentary, if you will, which is where the name came from. And that's fantastic. Yeah, because this, and I want to ask you about that, because something like alternative commentary is also something that could just be considered that's what we're doing.
That's right.
How do you trademark something like alternative commentary to be the name of a show when literally anybody who is not the set commentary team is technically doing some sort of alternate commentary?
Yeah, so when it comes to the trademark law, there's something called a descriptive trademark. So it describes the thing you're doing, the thing that it is, a feature, function, use, characteristic, quality, or ingredient of the product or the service. So while your service, you know, you are providing alternative commentary, and I could say, hey, welcome to the Mike Dawkins Show. I'm going to provide alternative commentary to whatever AEW is doing. That's descriptive use, right? I just used it in a sentence. I'm not using it as branding. But the way you did it, where you had it in a graphic up on the screen, in the corner, you're advertising, hey, don't watch the normal feed, watch alternative commentary. That, you're using it as a brand.
Wow.
And so when you're using it as a brand, you can protect it as a trademark.
And now I'm the only one who can.
Look out.
I'm the only one who can. No, thank you so much. This is so cool. And So Says Chernoff is really cool to actually have. Now, a lot of people are wondering, well, why did you have to, you know, it's not like my brother was going to start his own show. So why, you know, So Says Chernoff is so specific to my last name.
Yeah.
But to me, I also felt that that was really important that other people wouldn't be able to take. I'm very proud to have been IAW TV, International Academy of Web Television, award-winning host for So Says Chernoff. So I felt like, hey, you know what? This is a brand I'd like to get out there, and I don't want people, you know, people are constantly trying to create knockoff versions of me. You know, that's something.
Well, yeah.
I think everybody knows that. If you want to sell something, you just slap my face on it, and then peel it off, and then sell the.
Yeah, and then sell the thing that's left over.
The thing that's left over, because nobody wants,
Yeah, well, the thing about protecting trademarks and protecting the brand is you're not just protecting those three words. You're protecting substantially against uses of substantially similar marks, right? It's all about likelihood of confusion. That's the test.
Right.
So just because somebody's last name isn't Chernoff, it might be close to it. And so if they, so says, right, Smithoff or whatever, that could be
incredibly common name on
very,
the East
very
Coast.
Very common name.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I think that's fascinating. I wanted to, you know, this is Wrestling with the Law, and I think there's a lot going on in the wrestling world right now, a lot of legal speak, legalese. So I figured what people really wanted us to talk about was Cody Rhodes' name.
Yeah.
How, when he first came to AEW, he was Cody, just like he had been in Ring of Honor, New Japan. He was the American Nightmare Cody.
Yeah.
Because WWE owned the rights to Cody Rhodes. But by the end of his run in AEW, he started becoming Cody. He became Cody Rhodes.
Cody
again.
Rhodes again. Yeah.
Just in time to go back to WWE. How did that come about? How does something like that work? Because obviously it didn't happen overnight. Another one that's a perfect example is Billy Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Gunn being able to be Billy Gunn, which is something that he was in WWE for so long. It was a WWE name and character.
That's right.
Walk us through how do names like that get, how do you get that to the talent and away from the company?
So everybody might remember that during shows, when Cody would come out, it would often be Cody and Brandi Rhodes.
Correct.
It'd be, yes, Billy and Austin Gunn, right? But it would just be Billy. It was never Billy Gunn by itself. But with trademark rights, it's all about being the first to use, and it's all about continuing to use. So there's arguments to be made that a lot of these folks that have retired from WWE, they're not using that gimmick name anymore. WWE is not, right? They own it. Their position is, well, we've got the network, we've got Peacock, we've got whatever, and it's up there. Well, that's not really ongoing use. That's more archival use. It'd be like being a plumber and, well, I've got my commercials on YouTube. I don't actually provide you plumbing services anymore, but my commercial's still out there, so that's still use. So you can kind of push back on that, because if they were to lose against that argument, that damages their entire portfolio.
Right. So it's not a hill that they want to die on. That's pretty much what you're hoping for initially when you get into it, is, yeah, this isn't a big enough name that I need to, that they're going to say, yes, we're going
to
bet the
whole.
That's
a hill to die on.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it made the news recently that Ryback, for example, got his name.
Yeah.
Right. And he fought with him. And part of his strategy was to say, they're not using this. They haven't used it. Since I was taken off TV, they never used it. And then all of a sudden that disappeared and he owned his name. So again, it's not a hill that they want to die on. And he had the guts to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fight it. But Cody and Billy specifically are interesting, because I talked with Cody about it. And WWE had applications for registration that were pending. They didn't have their certificate yet. And they kept kicking the can down the road and not doing what they needed to do to finalize it, and eventually let it go abandoned. So at that point, I jumped on it. The day it went abandoned, I jumped on it.
How did you know? Do you have a little tickler there waiting for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a team of people at the firm that will dock it and follow things. Says, hey, check on this weekly, check on this monthly, whatever. And so we knew what date they had to file something by, and if they didn't, it would go abandoned. So we jumped on it. Got ourselves back in line. What WWE had done was petition to revive it. So you can pay a fee during the process, get something brought back to life. As all of this is happening, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. I distinctly remember where I was. I was out on the riding mower, mowing the lawn at my house, and I get a text from one of my friends. He goes, check this out. This is really cool. And it's a photo. And I said, what am I looking at? It's a program from what was Dusty's Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling? Is,
yeah,
that right? Dusty's Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling from the early 2000s. He goes, this was Dusty's promotion, and Cody was a referee. I said, really? Send me the pictures of that. And he opened it up, and he took photos of it, and it says, the Stardust Kid special referee, Cody Rhodes.
Wow.
So use in 2001 or 2, whatever it was, well before his WWE use, and first to use always wins.
Really? So all it doesn't matter what level. So here's an example. I'm going to throw something out there. When I was 15 years old, I started running indie wrestling shows. Been in this business
like
a little,
you do at 15.
Yeah, like most people do. And we had a show called TWF Armageddon, June 18th, 1999. I want to say about a year and a half later, maybe half a year. I don't remember if it was 99 or 2000. WWF at the time put out the pay-per-view Armageddon. We also had a show in 2004 called New Year's Revolution. I think 2 years later, WWF put out a pay-per-view called New Year's Revolution. Now, I am not conceited enough to believe that WWF was monitoring my...
Don't sell yourself short.
Okay. At the time, you know, I'm this young kid going, oh, man, we should sue them for our name. And then we laugh about it and we go, no, who cares? Hypothetically, is that something that we would have won?
You were first to use. You used that trademark on a wrestling brand. So the reason, one of the reasons to get a federal registration is you get nationwide rights. Otherwise, what you have is called a common law trademark, which means you only have rights where you're using.
Okay.
So your rights probably weren't nationwide, right? They were in your area, whatever that was. I don't know where that was, but if you were on the border of two states, you probably had rights in two states, right? You probably had some people that would come over.
So the Philadelphia area.
Yeah. So you certainly would have had rights in Pennsylvania. But for them to be a nationwide, well, worldwide product, to be told, I mean, you guys filed and you're using this WWE, congratulations, but you weren't first in Pennsylvania, means they can't use it in Pennsylvania. So how difficult does that make having a pay-per-view, right? You have to box out Pennsylvania and nobody there can buy it? Of course not. So
what's the statute of limitations on something?
Ooh, buddy, you're way past it, unfortunately.
Okay, so you know what? So I'm going to announce right here, WWE, I'm gifting you those names.
You're a giver.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. It's the least I could do for them.
Yeah.
Look, they're going to make it. I think so.
Now they will.
Yeah. Because, yeah. So with Cody, so that's incredible. That Billy Gunn, though, that's different because first to use, and at least to my knowledge, Billy Gunn was first used in the WWF as part of the Smoking Guns, something they created and came up with. So how did that work?
So when he got to AEW, it was it all Double or Nothing maybe? Where there was the Battle Royale and he came in and it was Billy Gunn and wearing green and shopping and doing all these things. The WWE sent, you know, a nastygram and said, hey, you can't be doing this. This is our IP.
By the way, a nastygram is when Brian Knobbs shows up at your office and just yells at you. You cannot use their copyright.
Okay. So he they got a hold of me and we talked it through. And he had owned the registration for Billy Gunn for years at that point, 4 or 5 years, because they had let it go. They let it lapse and weren't following it. And he swooped in. This was before he and I worked together, but swooped in, got it. He was working for the company at the time, right? He was a trainer.
Okay.
So that's probably why they were like, oh, well, this is one of our guys. We don't need to fight it out. He's part of the family. But then he wasn't part of the family. So they had come at him, and, you know, I kind of pushed back a little bit with, hey, I mean, that's cool and all, but you guys aren't using it. He's owned it for a long time. So I don't know that you're right.
Trademark their face paint was Danhausen.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through how something like that can happen? And something also that's interesting is that he was the first, right?
Yeah. First ever do it in wrestling.
But if you look, there's the Road Warriors, Demolition. Mm-hmm. There is some classic face
iconic paint. Face paint.
Iconic, right. That's the word I'm looking for, iconic face paint. That they did not actually own. It's been on merchandise and whatnot, but they didn't own that. So walk us through this. Danhausen, which, by the way, we probably shouldn't call it face paint because from what I understand, that's actually his face.
He
puts on the
face.
Human,
yeah.
The human complexion for, yeah. So,
true. Yeah, so he and I were discussing protecting his various brands and his trademarks and sayings. You know, he's a very nice, very evil. He's got a number of them. And he said, well, what about the face paint? I'm worried that, you know, somebody maybe on the indies or whatever would try to pass themselves off as me or do something similar. I said, you know, nobody's ever done it. There's no reason it can't be done because a trademark is, at its very core definition, a source identifier. So it identifies a source of the services. So when you see that face paint or you see whatever, you know, hey, this is the guy who's doing the wrestling. This is the guy who I want to see, who entertains me. And so I said, there's no reason it can't be done. It just hasn't been done. And so God bless him. He goes, well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. So you have to get a drawing of it, so we get the drawing and all of that and put it through. And, of course, the trademark office said, no, we're not going to allow this. This is just a face. It's just paint. We can't do this. At which point I went back to the trademark office and said, not only can you, it's been done before, just not in wrestling. Here's KISS. Each member's face has been registered as a trademark. All the face paint, you know, the Starman,
wow.
And, you know,
yeah.
All this. There's a little character named Ronald McDonald. that they have protected the face paint and the appearance of Ronald McDonald. So
there's 700 indie workers right now who all go by Doink that are scared to death.
Yeah, right. Terrified right now. Just pointed out it's been done, just not in the wrestling space. And so we filed the necessary specimens because you have to prove that you're using it, right? So screen grabs and action figures and, you know, kind of merchandise that we were protecting. And they came back and they said, well, no, this doesn't count because the specimen varies a little bit. You know, he puts on the face paint is what it is, but it has little minor variations from time to time. And so, again, I went back to him and said, you know, cool, I appreciate your rejection. However, the trademark office has a precedent of allowing minor variations for face paint. Again, I redirect you to Kiss and Ronald McDonald and all these other things. And so they eventually, the examiner called and was like, yeah, you're right. I mean, I didn't think it was possible. I didn't think it was going to be a thing, but we have done it. It just never seen it before. Wow. And so then I took the time to go back and kind of look through all the old wrestling registrations I could find just to make sure, did Legion of Doom do this? Did the Road Warriors? Did anybody? And they hadn't. So Danhausen was the first.
Wow. So now if Demolition, for instance, who continue to use the face paint, I just saw them yesterday, and they're still painted up. If they were to come to you and say, hey, we want to use this, is that something that you now feel pretty confident that they'd be able to do?
Conversations may have been had.
Oh, wow. Here comes the axe and here comes Dawkins.
Yeah, right. He's,
so, wow, that's awesome. That's really cool. What would you say was maybe like the hardest one for you to get through as far as a trademark in wrestling?
I don't know that there are any that have been particularly difficult per se just because of the mark itself, but on the other end, in the trademark office, there's an examiner, and it's just another person, another lawyer who went that way and they work for the government. And a lot of times you'll get folks that maybe English isn't their first language or they have no understanding whatsoever of wrestling.
Right.
And so they'll immediately just, well, no, you can't do this. It's just a character. Well, of course it's a character. But, you know, so was Johnny Carson. So was Bette Midler. There's the real person, Johnny Carson, and the real person, Bette Midler, but there's also the character that the world sees. And those were litigated maybe even up to the Supreme Court where they said, yeah, of course you can protect that. You can protect a stage name and protect a personal name if it's branded and used properly. So sometimes you'll get these rejections that it's just nonsensical, and that's frustrating for me to have to go back to somebody and say, hey, I know I told you I thought it was going to be easy, and it should be easy. This person's wrong. Right. They're absolutely wrong. We'll fight it. We'll hopefully overcome it. I'll call them and try to have a conversation as two people. But if that doesn't work, there's an appeals process. And we can appeal it above the head of the examiner. And all but maybe one or two instances, once I file the appeal, they retract the rejection and move it forward. So they just dig in for no reason. And then they're like, well, I'm going to lose this. I'll cite to them, hey, I can't speak to all of the wrestling-related trademarks that there are, but here's the 350 that I have worked on and that are registered, so clearly it's a thing.
Who that you've worked with in wrestling do you think has, and I in my mind think I know the answer to this, who has asked you to get the most trademarks or the most trademarks that you have gotten for one person?
I mean, I feel like we should say it at the same time, like on three, just use the last name.
One, two, three, Cardona. Okay, yes, obviously.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt had reached out to Conrad right after their release, and they had filed for using somebody else, the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast, and they had gotten a rejection, and they were like, well, what does this mean? Did we waste money? Are we going to be able to get it? I don't know this attorney. I'm just confused. And Conrad's like, call my friend. And so Matt and I started talking, and of course it got registered and moved it through. It was very simple sort of thing. And he was like, you know, I can't be Zack Ryder. I can't do, what was it, Long Island?
I see.
Yeah, you know, all those differences, the woo-woo-woo. And not that he wanted to. He's like, but I put time and effort and all of that into it, but they own it. So if I'm going to create these new things, if I'm going to go out here and become the indie god, I feel like I should own it. Yeah, you're right. So, you know, you never know, right, whenever you pick a new gimmick or pick a new saying, what's going to catch on.
Yeah.
But you can be out in front so that knockoffs don't start happening, so that people don't start stealing your stuff. and getting out in front. And so that's what he's done. He's been really good about getting out in front. And he just did a video recently. Did you see the vlog?
Yeah, I saw the video, yeah.
he did the video where he went into his toy room in his house, and there's the stack of these glorious frames. And he starts going through them. He's like, oh, boy, let's see which ones I wasted money on. And I'm like, oh, no. He's just going to shit all over it. And it turns out it wasn't. He had more, and that was like, yeah, I was right to do this. I was right to do this. And there's only one or two, three that it was like, yeah, this went nowhere.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's an awesome thing now. It's kind of, you know, we were talking, we had a stage show yesterday, and I had the opportunity to talk to Mikey Ruckus and Dale Oliver, who did the music for AEW and TNA. And we were talking about the differences between, you know, now having original music or being able to license music. And Mikey had talked about how many independent wrestlers he was making original music for.
Yeah.
Guys like a Matt Cardona had original music made for when he got out on the indies so that he knew, hey, I own this. This is mine now.
Yep.
Then you look at a guy like Cody Rhodes, who did the exact same thing and then used it all over the indies, used it in Japan, used it in Ring of Honor, used it in AEW, and then was even able to bring it back and now uses it in WWE. And I feel like this is something that indie wrestlers out there, indie promoters out there, should really be looking at. This opportunity of protecting their intellectual property, protecting the names and these things, because there are some promotions out there that have these annual events that are, you know, recognizable to them, but they don't own a trademark for them. So I highly recommend everybody contact the gimmick attorney for that.
And please do.
And in turn, then for everyone that you do, he will give me a free...
it's like the Subway Sub Club.
Yeah,
full punch the card.
Yeah, if 10 independent wrestlers get registered trademarks, yeah, we get one free.
No, but you're right about the music, because that's copyright, right? That's something different from trademark, but it is its own intellectual property. And copyright is an artistic expression, right? It's the expression of an idea. So when you have music, you have lyrics, and you have an arrangement of notes and all of these things. And like a stage name, like a catchphrase, like a hand gesture, or these sorts of things, that gets to be associated with somebody. When you hear the glass break, we know who's coming, or who's supposed to be coming. Otherwise, it's a swerve, but we know what we're expecting, right? And so if you leave a company and get fired from a company, and there's that whatever it is, guitar riff that starts, people expect to see that person. Well, if you can't use it anymore, now you've got to start that over. So if you come with your own music, you own the rights to your own music, you have the ability to take it with you wherever you go. It's just another part of your character.
Now, you're you know, trademark attorney. Is copyright, does that fall in there as well? Is that still
I think it'd be safer to say I'm an intellectual property attorney. No, I'm actually a registered patent attorney. I went to college for engineering and hated it, so went to law school after that. Mm-hmm. But to be a patent attorney, you have to have an engineering degree. So I do all intellectual property sort of things. It's just trademarks is the one that gets the most attention.
At this point, because you still work for the same firm that you were working for beforehand, right?
Yeah.
If you had to give a percentage, how much of your business that...
Yeah, it's hard to say because it changes day by day. Mm-hmm. I touch a lot of different files and do a lot of work for a lot of different people on different days. But on any given day, minimum probably a third of what I do is wrestling. And some days it's all wrestling all the time. So 30 to 100% day after day is wrestling related.
So you were talking about with music and the different names and the different what the wrestlers can do with that. When somebody like Edge, right? There's been a lot of debate of what's Edge going to do next, right? The rumor mill, at least, is his dates are up, his contract with WWE.
Right.
He says he's got an offer in his inbox. There's a lot of people as we sit here on Sunday wondering whether or not
he's busy tonight. Yeah,
right.
Of course.
So let's, hypothetically speaking, Edge, Adam Copeland, leaves the WWE and decides to come to AEW. Hypothetically, I know there's an AEW logo behind me. I have absolutely no idea whatsoever. I don't even know him or anybody. Okay.
Yeah.
What legally could he get away with? We're talking from name, from attire, from entrance with his pyro that's, you know, unique to him.
Yeah.
To his music that he uses from Alter Bridge, to the You Think You Know Me both the words you think you know me and the recording you think you know me. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through the whole idea of what could he use, what couldn't he use, and why?
So I'm guessing with him, most of it's going to be dictated by contracts, right, for the music and that sort of thing. I would guess that the license that WWE has is an exclusive license. They can license that song out however they want for anything they want except wrestling. So
okay.
Unless it was a non-exclusive license, you know, even AEW and Tony Khan can't get it, right? So the music's right. Probably off limits. When he comes out, he'll be Adam Copeland.
Yeah.
He won't be Edge. The reason that Christian Cage can be Christian Cage is because he was Christian Cage before he went to WWE. But it's why he can't be Christian. Right. They have Christian registered. They own Christian. But they don't own Christian Cage. Mm-hmm. He does. Jay owns it. So unless he wants to come out as Sexton Hardcastle.
I was going to say, Sexton Hardcastle.
That's still on the table.
It's all elite, folks.
That's on the table. Now, as far as ring attire and that sort of thing, again, it's a contractual thing. A lot of their WWE contracts will say, hey, we own anything around your character. So any hand gestures, any you think you know me, all that, the catchphrases and all of this. So he might be able to have, and probably can, have tights that are maybe reminiscent of the Edge mm-hmm. character, but it would need to be all new stuff.
So you wouldn't be able to have that R in the center. You wouldn't
no.
be able to have, right. Now, you think you know me. Obviously, I mean, the sound bite of that came from his original promos, which were created by WWE. So I would have to imagine WWE, that's theirs. They own that sound bite. But if someone else was to record or to say into a microphone for his big pop or for his big entrance, you think you know me, even if it's Edge himself, you think you know me, could he?
So this is where you get the mix of IP, right? Mm-hmm. Because what you're asking about is copyright. So the recording, the specific performance of that phrase is one thing. That's copyright.
Right.
So, of course, they can't use that, right? But well, now you're talking about, well, what if Adam did it himself? Well, then now you're talking trademark. Because they probably, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm pretty confident WWE owns a registration for You Think You Know Me.
Well, they will after this.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, Adam.
So, you know, my guess is he would come out with something like, you do know me.
Okay, that was my other question, because you remember Kurt Angle when he went to TNA, it was, it's real, it's damn real, which of course is, it's true, it's damn true.
Right.
So, I guess that's my question too, because you mentioned earlier with So Says Chernoff that protects against, you know, So Says someone else.
Right.
It's really protecting against that So Says as the name of their show.
Yeah.
Is that some? But so then you're with Kurt Angle in that case, was all he did was replace true with real.
Mm-hmm.
But we're saying this protects people from replacing Chernoff with another name. So
how does that work?
Yeah.
So I learned a phrase as a young attorney from the senior attorney who, rest in peace, was a spitting image of Orville Redenbacher. But the man was a wealth of knowledge and an incredible lawyer. And he used to say, Mike, may your words today be tasteful, for tomorrow you may have to eat them. I'm like, okay. You know, basically, watch what you say. It might come back and bite you. So it's hard to say, well, you can't do that because it's really this small difference, Kurt Angle that went to TNA, mm-hmm. when you have said, well, Rhino with an I is right. different enough from Rhino with a Y.
Taz with two Zs. Right.
So we don't get to talk out of both sides of our mouth.
Right.
So if you're going to take the position that those minor differences are more than enough so that you guys can own something, then you can't go after everybody for every little thing that's a minor difference.
Right. But I think having something like this does create that basis, right, for that kind of baseline of saying, okay, well, they're clearly trying to copy something, right?
An homage.
Right.
Yeah.
So listen, the law to me, I think it's fascinating. I like to pretend I understand it, but thankfully I have people like you who actually understand it that I can call and ask to help me with it. But anything else that you want that you think might be interesting that people might be curious about?
I won't go into all the details, but I want to read it directly. There's a lot of speculation about an employee versus an independent contractor, right?
Let's get into that.
There's a checklist of 20 items, and we can go through some of those if we want to, but the thing that I find most intriguing that I love about it, this has been challenged, right, a few times. I think Raven had challenged it. I think there were some other folks that had challenged WWE. And what the courts had ultimately said was, look, you signed a contract, and in that contract with WWE, it says, I'm an independent contractor. I agree I'm an independent contractor. I'm not an employee. So you have said this, and this was a freely negotiated contract. Now, we all know that's bullshit. It's not freely negotiated. They hand you a contract, and unless you're the Roman Reigns of the world, either sign it or you don't. Right. Do you want to come play in our sandbox or don't you?
Right.
Okay, cool. Sign it. So it's not really true that it's freely negotiated, but that's neither here nor there. You agreed to sign the contract. The contract says you're an independent contractor.
Sure.
And so when they try to challenge that, the court doesn't even have to actually look at anything, doesn't look at the 20 factors. They just look at, you signed a contract. Oh, and by the way, it's Connecticut courts, because that's the choice of venue. So it's WWE's backyard where they've been for decades, right? So, but what's interesting about that, and we were talking about this a little bit before we came out here, is, you know, the things that are inevitable, death and the IRS, right? Those are inevitable. The IRS website, this is what I love.
People right now are just like, wow, what a great conversation you guys were having off air. Man, I really wish I could have been a fly on the wall for that one.
But the IRS website themselves, they can take it upon themselves to look at some of these contracts and taxes of people, because their own website says, if an employer-employee relationship exists, regardless of what the relationship is called. So they're saying, call yourself an independent contractor. We don't care. If you're being treated as an employee, then you're an employee. And accordingly, if you're not an independent contractor and your earnings are generally not subject to employment tax, they will be now. So that creates a huge tax implication for WWE. They would have to pay back employment taxes for all the money they've paid to wrestlers for however far back the IRS can go.
Wow.
So that's a huge implication.
Which, again, I would imagine is why they will fight tooth and nail. We talked about the hill they're willing to die on.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Because I would think, I mean, you know, I don't know the IRS well. I'm not a tax lawyer. But I would think that they would not only want those back taxes, because we're talking millions and millions of dollars every year for years and years and years, but there'd be penalties. And they love to hammer people with penalties. Yeah. So that'd be a real concern. But like I said, we won't go through the 20-point checklist of what an independent contractor is, but let's go through the first four, because for the first four things, if the answer of these is yes, if you answer these questions yes, you're probably an independent contractor, which would say if the answer is no, you're probably not.
This is the legal version of you might be a redneck.
Yeah, yeah, you might be an independent contractor. So the first question, oh boy, I just closed it out. The first question is profit or loss. So, can the worker make a profit or suffer a loss as a result of the work, aside from the money earned from the project? This should involve real economic risk, not the risk of not getting paid. So, that's to say, if a wrestler goes out there and you're getting paid $1,000 a match, say, of course, the loss of $1,000, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about whether or not you do the work, whether or not you do well, there's a profit or loss associated with it. Do you bear the risk? Do you bear the risk that nobody buys the pay-per-view and there's nobody in the crowd? No, you don't.
No.
Right? You're getting paid based on your contract. You bear no risk of loss. The answer is no to that, right?
Right.
So that suggests employee, right? Not an independent contractor. The second one, investment. Does the worker have an investment in the equipment and facilities used to do the work? The greater the investment, the more likely independent contractor status. No. They didn't buy the rings. They didn't get the venue.
Could it be argued that, you know, this is, and not to give them something here, but the argument I would think is if you hire a contractor to an independent contractor to actually work on, let's say, on your home.
Yeah.
Right. They're bringing the tools
and the scaffolding and all those things.
But they're not actually, doing. They don't have the home. They don't have. That's not their property. The tile they're installing doesn't belong to them. So in a way, could it be argued? Well, the ring is just that's where they're doing their work. Just like a house is where they're doing their work.
Yeah.
They're creating something for our audience to enjoy. Just like this contractor is creating a brand new kitchen for you to enjoy.
Sure.
But they're bringing their own tools. They're bringing their boots. They're bringing their tights, their elbow pads, their knee pads.
I dare to argue that when a contractor comes to your house and they buy the shingles and they buy the tile and all of that, that's actually part of your contract with them. We will buy it and you will reimburse us for it.
Wow.
So it is kind of theirs, right? That's just part of the deal, is that you're going to pay for it. It's ours. We bought it. We bring it. We get it. There's an argument there. But if you look at substantial investment was the language, right? An investment in the equipment and all that. The greater the investment, the more likely.
Right.
Sure, they own the rings, but you've got to look at the total package. They had to acquire a huge building. They had trucks that had to get everything there. They have all these employees. They're setting up and tearing down and running lights and doing the smoke and all.
Versus a couple hundred dollars.
Versus a couple hundred bucks.
To get a pair of boots and
yeah. And frankly, you could wear your gym clothes if you wanted to. The reason you don't is you want a better presentation, right?
Man, just calling Kevin Owens out right now on stage. Just offensive.
It's a bold move.
Yeah.
So the third question, the work for more than one firm. Does the person work for more than one company at a time? This tends to indicate independent contractor status, but isn't conclusive since employees can also work for more than one employer, right? You can work at McDonald's and also have a job at JCPenney, right? You can do that. That's okay. So that's why they're saying this isn't the end-all, be-all question, but can you work somewhere else? Well, no. None of them.
Not WWE.
Not WWE.
Sure. AEW does allow
some
specific dates and all, but they still have control over.
You got it. It's exceptions to the rule. It's not carte blanche that, of course, you can work anytime, anywhere, whatever you want to do. No, you have to get it approved and get it blessed and whatever. So there's no to that question. Last question. Services offered to the general public. Does the worker offer services to the general public? So does Adam Copeland, now that he's free of his contract, is he going to come up to you and say, I want to wrestle at your house, Josh?
I mean, he's cool welcome he to, but I don't. He's probably not going to want to do that.
Right.
No.
They're not offering services to the general public at all. It will be other promotions, other companies, and of course, there'll be public performances. But he's not that. No wrestlers is offering services to the general public. So those first four questions, if the answer is likely no, you're probably an employee.
And we haven't even gotten
to the other 16.
But then it's who's going to argue it, right? Who's
going to be the whistleblower that then gets blacklisted and can't make a living? And that's why it's
so. The question is it going to take a? Let's say you're like a big name in wrestling, you've made millions of dollars, but you're not necessarily welcome, wanted, or don't want to go to the big two companies. Maybe you've left on less than ideal circumstances from both the WWE and AEW, but you're a really big name with a lot of money, and you live in... The thing is, maybe that's the type of person who starts the ball rolling, who says, hey, I made my money.
Yeah.
I don't care. Blackball me from the business. I don't care. I'm not going here, and I'm not going here.
Right. Certainly, someone above the fray, it'll take either that or the IRS just independently saying, you know, this doesn't seem right. We need to look at this because they're inevitable. They'll be able to do whatever they want. But it's also one of those things, be careful what you ask for. So if you want to be an employee, then you're going to get treated as an employee, which means there's a lot of additional and different cost that comes with being an employee. Benefits and things like that have a cost. The taxes that the company now has to pay on your behalf has a cost. So maybe salaries go down because there's additional costs that the company didn't have before. So you have to be careful. You have to really analyze, do we want this? Or do we just want to be independent contractors but actually get treated like independent contractors? That's the question, and that's for them to decide.
Well, something to chew on, something to think about.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope all of you enjoyed this as well.
Thanks for
having me. Wrestling. Yeah, can we talk about this beard for a second?
I lost a bet.
Well, you know what? Joke's on them.
Yeah,
you're looking good. Look at this guy over here, right? Was it illegal? Yeah, was this
dead? I'm a man of
great
my word.
Question. Q&A from the audience. No, thank you so much,
thanks,
Mike, for taking the time to do this. Wrestling with the Law with Mike Dawkins live here at StarCast 6 on Premier Streaming Network. I'm going to shake your hand, and then I'm going to bring up our... part two of this segment after a quick commercial break. How's that sound? Isn't that where they say monkeys in the truck? Isn't that their thing?
They do, the
right?
Yeah.
No, and they just walked out. Okay.